Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Additionally, I would like to thank you for inviting me here, as I was thinking of how lucky I am listening to the music of Ron, and how lucky I am to have the opportunity after the service, as oftentimes happens, to share with you and learn from you. We as Unitarian Universalists are those who share together in many ways and learn from each other. There is a long tradition that we are fortunate to inherit, which enables us to do so. We come here from various experiences of the last week, of the last month and years, to learn from each other, to share what we have learned to value in our lives, to be here as a community that cares for one another to the best of our ability, to join in celebration when things are high in our life, and to join in caring and sometimes grief when things are low. It is good to be together. It is good to be together in this place, and it is good to be together here this hour. I invite us into still another form of sharing, that of silence, of being together here in a moment of reflection, of meditation, of prayer. Taking this opportunity to appreciate the difference of being quiet alone and being quiet in community. Appreciating what it is like in a shared way, in silence, to attend to those things that rest on our heart. We live in a world of turmoil, though we also live in a world of heroic actions towards caring. We hold in our hearts this morning all those forms of destruction that mar our vision of what we wish to come, of natural destructions, earthquakes, heat waves, and of human-made constructions, cages and prisons. And we may hold in our hearts awareness of those, perhaps someone close to us we know, who is doing all that he or she can to change this world. And we may hold in our hearts all those we know, including ourselves, who are doing all we can to change ourselves, to be the person we dream of. May we, in this time of quiet, pay tribute to our dreams. Let us be together in silence for a short time. May that which surges up in our hearts be that which leads us forward tomorrow and for the future. So be it. Amen. Blessed be. Well, the fireworks have finally fizzled from Thursday's celebration of Independence Day. My neighbor was in England at the time on the 4th, and he thought it was inappropriate there to launch his fireworks for this occasion, so he just fired off his last night. It makes me a little bit uneasy, though, I have to say, on the 4th of July, in the celebration of Independence Day, to be with the kind of celebration we so often indulge. But it's not just Independence Day. I have a similar problem with the celebration of the summer solstice. While summer is definitely my favorite season, I just know how easy it is at the peak of light to forget the other half of the world that's in dark, and find it hard sometimes at the 4th of July to feel blatantly patriotic when patriotism can be so easily conflated with other values, such as America first, and knowing that the phrase America first may present a facade for President Trump first. So many of us today are pained, not just me, by lost dreams for what our country could be. It's hard to watch the news with immigrants drowning, watch children in cages, witness our international network disintegrating. Pew researchers say 70% of us feel we're off course. But it's not that I don't value independence. I do. And I think most of you do too, though perhaps a more accurate word would be autonomy. All of us, I suspect, wish to honor our unique experience and vision of who we are and of the world. We want to be special. We want to be unique. We would like to be responsible for making our own decisions. And there are times when interference is just plainly unwanted. We want to do things our way, and we need to honor our individual identities. We might even like to have our surroundings conform to our wishes, if that were possible. Certainly, we would like to be free from the unpredictability of surrounding events, such as floods and fires and landslides and earthquakes. We would like to be free from nature's viral invasions into our bodies, to be independent of disease, heart attack, Alzheimer's, ALS. When we're living with the thoughts of how valuable it is to be independent, it may become easy, though, to forget that this is a singular perspective on the world. It is our most common perspective, that is, to view the world from the perspective of what we want of ourselves at the center. But we are social creatures too, aren't we? We value community. We're here this morning at a gathering. We want friends, and we know they will not always think or behave exactly as we would like. We know that if we join any group, perhaps even here, there was going to be some conflict. So most of us really do not want complete independence, truly. Often we adapt our aspiration for independence and instead declare what we really desire is interdependence, hoping that this hyphenated word will accommodate both autonomy and connection. We want to maintain our autonomy, but at the same time, we long for interpersonal intimacy, and we seek the security that we hope will come with a safe community. And one of the communities we inhabit is our nation, and for which we hope also to have a feeling of security and caring. But like our personal relationships, our nation, our ethnic communities, and our world are subject to many conditions beyond our own control. Sometimes our divisions are painful, as we know perhaps through a divorce. Today, nationalistic interests, ethnic groupings, racial divisions, and gender identities are rising to the foreground, insinuating a lot of pain. Recently, until now, there's been one particular dominant tribe that has run our country, deciding everything: who would be allowed to settle the land, who could be dispossessed, who was free, who was not enslaved, who had the right to vote and did not. And now this particular hegemony of this white landowning tribe is losing exclusivity, and other groups are seeking a seat at the table, and there's much chaos and much division. Van Jones, who is Barack Obama's special advisor for green jobs, notes the division today, particularly that exists between political parties. He writes, "Liberals too often act like red state voters need to be conquered or converted to the NPR religion, and then we will all be well with the Republic. But similarly, on the right wing, everything about liberals is seen as perverse, weak, corrupting." So he writes, "The first step is to remind ourselves that we need each other. Liberals need conservatives, and conservatives need liberals to make this country," he writes, "work. We do need to be with people who are different. Interacting with others who are different is not a gratuity." Jones writes, for his part, he said, "I decided I didn't want to be victimized by that narrow, focused algorithm, tribalism. So, as a spiritual practice, I went and searched for every right-wing, conservative, white nationalist I could find and followed them all. Now my Instagram feed doesn't make me feel very warm and fuzzy, but maybe you just," he writes, "have to get your warm and fuzzy someplace else. I have a better understanding of where my opponents are coming from, and that informs my approach. For my part, last year, I decided to listen more closely to those who oppose gun control. I've marched with the Parkland students, and I've read most of the reasons for enacting gun control, but I realized I knew almost nothing about the persons, books, political editorials that disagreed with this point of view. I'd only really talked to people about their feeling for guns, about their fears of government, or about their felt need for protection, and definitely not about their resentment towards us liberals, who do sometimes put them down. I went on the web and began to catching up on some opinions. Perhaps the most well-known exponent of gun-free ownership of guns is John Lott. I ordered his book, The War on Guns, and began reading. I haven't gotten too far, but I'm already struck by the pain that many feel that have had slurs cast upon them by gun opponents. The most disturbing factor of all to me has been to note how similar the taunts are on either side. And I've discovered a few facts which didn't seem to make it to NPR. One organization today that is working hard to increase dialogue between those of us who are red and those who are blue is a bipartisan network of leaders and organizations called Better Angels. Have any of you heard of this? You have Catherine. Yes, and Bob. It takes its name from Abraham Lincoln's appeal before the Civil War for the better angels of our nature to come forth. Better Angels is having a good deal of success. There's a chapter in New Jersey, and a few of us are trying to organize one in Morristown. But I'm not only me, and I'm not only we. Though I am composed of relationships that are important to me, there is more yet to who I am. I belong in a universe that is far vaster than my awareness of my personhood and my identity, and far vaster than even my personal love for friends and the affirmation of community. When he wrote the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson Unitarian referenced this larger awareness by writing that we're entitled to separate by the laws of nature and of nature's God. Now, he was a good deist, and that was probably about as far as he could go with theological terminology. But he continued to affirm in his language that all men are created equal and their rights are inalienable because this is a condition endowed by their creator. Jefferson's view stood midway between the old theology of an active God who directly intervened in human affairs and a world that recognized nothing more than me or we. And I mention his words this morning not to imply for any reason that we need to believe in a creator, and certainly not to erroneously propose that our country began as a Christian nation, but instead to recognize that we do need a larger point of reference if we are to secure social cohesion in our world today and become who we are meant to be as ourselves. It's interesting that the very first Americans, the natives of this land, only lastly attended to their individuality. They derived their self-worth instead from their membership in the large community, the tribe. And the tribe, in turn, considered its connection to be that of living in harmony with the Great Spirit or Manitou. Something about the cohesiveness of the Native Americans must have appealed to the early Europeans, because decades before the Revolution, Benjamin Franklin lamented that English settlers were constantly fleeing over to the Indians, and he wondered why no Indians did the same to the Europeans. Now, we today have replaced this theological perspective of Jefferson's time with, more than anything else, an idealism and an idea of social contracts which are very vapid and do not command supreme allegiance. People all over the world are assenting and do assent to the UN doctrine of human rights, but at the very same time are more and more resorting to ethnic cleansing. At the Mass MoCA Museum in North Adams, Massachusetts, there's a very interesting art exhibit. It's along the main driveway, and I think it forms a metaphor for our times. Artist Natalie Jeremijenko has hung trees up down from wires. I don't know, has anybody visited Mass MoCA? The roots of these trees have molded into stems to absorb air, and their stems have become roots and stretched downwards. They seem to be flourishing, but we know that their existence is precarious and their life dependency artificially supported by humans. The trees depend upon the wires that human custodians have strung up along, as well with the containers of water that feed them. The trees at Mass MoCA have adapted to human design. They live suspended by the wires of human engineering, but they are estranged from their natural habitat and their natural interconnections. They are unable to chemically connect through their root systems with their neighbors, as trees naturally do in order to provide each other with survival information and warn each other of danger. I propose that we are in the midst of worldwide angst today because we've hung so many of our ideals upon abstract philosophical and legal wires erected by very well-meaning rational ethicists, but which are very tenuous. As a result, our ideals are not rooted and our aspirations are ungrounded, So to many, our ideals actually look elitist and elicit rebellion. And even at their best, do they really substitute for the virtues of everyday kindness and caring, honesty and respect? These kind of assertions grow from what I refer to as the perspective of thee. We could refer to thee by a myriad names: human potential, God, evolution, love, emptiness in the Buddhist tradition, or by no name at all, since any name will be too small. It will reduce thee to an understanding that's simplified enough for me or we to understand. Some quantum physicists refer to what I'm calling thee simply as a field. No altar is required for thee, no bowing, but only being mindful deeply of the everyday experiences of our lives and that which lies deepest and most solid in our hearts. We may notice thee in the grace of our hand movements while washing dishes. We can find thee in the beauty of the surf at the seaside, in the caring of an elderly parent. And whenever we surrender to our dream, we get a taste. We open a portal to transcendence when we reunite with a separated one, when we adopt a child, when we just say thank you, when we restore lost communication with a spouse or a pet, when we care for a friend in need through beautiful music, whenever we react from the perspective of what is whole and bigger than me or we. We are ultimately powered in this way when we march to the office of our council person or congressman, when we vote, or if necessary, even subject ourselves to arrest. Our ventures springing from this source will be created from a comprehensiveness that's too large to put in names, and so often, if named, becomes once again narrow. But it will be from a recognition of our embeddedness in a grand whole. We are more even than interconnected, I submit. We are embedded in original oneness. This is why, as Van Jones wrote, when we are free, we must free us all. And when we free one, we free us all. When we work to aid the exploited, we liberate also the oppressor. And as Van Jones puts it, this is not easy work. He says, if I have any quarrel with the present progressive movement, it is that there sometimes seems to be too little space for our opposite numbers to be free also, for them to feel dignity and respect. Speaking to a woman, a person of color, LGBTQ, or speaking to an immigrant or a Muslim, it seems unfair to say to them, you have to get free and you also have to free the people who are holding you down. It is unfair, and it is not just, but it is absolutely necessary. It is the hope of those working for better angels and many other of us who wish to establish more dialogue between red and blue Americans that this is possible. More important for us than agreeing, I believe, upon any issue today is finding a way to talk about the issues. In general, as a spiritual people, and particularly as Unitarian Universalist, I believe we have a mission. It is to deepen the understanding of us all, which we are so skilled at because we appreciate diversity to such a large degree. And at the same time, to help us help ground ourselves and others in a larger perspective than me or we. Because we may understand that acting from such a perspective makes possible what may seem impossible. According to mythology in the Judeo-Christian tradition, when the Israelites were freed from Egypt, God parted the seas, but then the seas caved in on the Egyptian army. And the Jews rejoiced, and God said, "Why are you rejoicing? They're my children too." Which is why on the 4th of July, when I watched the fireworks, I thought this year less about the lines from the Star Spangled Banner and bombs bursting in air, and more about the Big Bang, which radiated into light all of the stars, one of which holds in its orbit this unique blue planet, where a common species is trying its level best to survive beyond the ignorance of its source and to envision a new era of harmony and care for us all. Please let us join together in the words for extinguishing the chalice. We extinguish the flame of the light of truth, the warmth of love, and the energy of action. Burn bright in our hearts until we are together again. May we leave this place knowing that we are more than we often think, that we have love that we might not even imagine, that we have courage that is beyond our consideration. May we so go into the world, bringing reconciliation where necessary, working for our values with strength where necessary, and join together as we can in unity. So be it. Amen. Amen. Blessed be it.